Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Big thanks to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
I'm going to do it right this time, guys. Oorah.
This is one for the peasants and the pez-losophers.
Ben, you didn't co-sign my oorah.
Actually, can I jump in here? I actually have a story for Noel. You know, I always listen to it afterwards because you don't have to edit it. So I thought up a pneumatic device for you in case you ever need to figure out. So it's like, ooh, baby, baby, it's a wild world. And then instead it's, ooh-rah,
okay.
It's a wild world.
That's good. I'll remember that. I'll probably never say it again now that I've finally closed the loop on that. But yeah, we are not talking about military words of motivation today. We're talking about something else entirely.
Yes, going back to the puns, peasants, pez-losophers. We talked about some divisive candies quite recently, and we also arrived at a conversation about an iconic thing, Pez. And I'm not sure, you guys, whether the rest of the world knows what Pez is. I've traveled pretty widely, and I don't see Pez all the time, but maybe it's like a sleeper hit candy. You know, maybe it's just somewhere in the aisle.
I guess I feel like people maybe know the dispensers more than they know the candy. And they're like, what even is that? For me, certainly, the dispensers hold a lot more interest than the candy itself, because I find the candy to be of that same echelon of trash candy as like Necco wafers and Smarties.
So here's the thing, and this is very interesting. This is part of our show today. Pez has an origin story that may surprise a lot of people. It may indeed be ridiculous history. We're going to go to Teresa McHemmer, writing for Smithsonian Magazine pretty often here. Let's give you one quote, folks. Teresa says, "One product hits a perfect harmony. The Pez dispenser, part character, part candy, and all collectible, the trinket has delighted kids and collectors around the world for decades. And yet, when Austrian confectioner Eduard Haas III invented Pez, he set out to corner an entirely different marketing." Can I get some dramatic music, Max?
An entirely different market, to be sure. So first, let's introduce us to our main character, the inventor of Pez, as you said, Ben, Edward Haas.
The third,
of course, indeed. His bio from MIT, which they don't write bios for just anyone. He was born near Vienna, Austria in 1897 and was part of a very enterprising family. His grandfather, Edward Haas, the first, was an actual facts doctor and had created a new type of baking powder that was used to make cakes lighter and airier. His son, Edward Haas the second, briefly attended medical school, but instead of going into the medical field, he ran a wholesale grocery business. Enter Edward the third, who tries his hand at mixing up a batch of this baking powder, because I guess it didn't really take off. It was just more of like a pet project of Edward the second, and the hopes that he could sell it as part of the wholesale grocery operation. He did succeed in his attempt, which gave him the needed boost of confidence to go into the confectionery business.
And to jump in here real quick, I don't think this source had it in there, but I think it was a different source I was reading. I think he was like 16 when he was doing this, like really young.
Enterprising like, chap.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, 16 is essentially 35 years old. Right. That's a quick inflation calculation there.
He's a regular Timothy Chalamet portraying young Willy Wonka.
Well, it's tough to get into acting, you know, and we wished him the best.
By the shade. I like young Tim. I'm going to see him in Dune 2 this evening.
So by the 1920s, we've got this family baking business, right, from Austria. And our buddy E.H. the third takes over managing the company when he turns 18. And he does one of the coolest things you could do at the time, takes out some ads in the local newspaper, which is like posting on social media. And they say, look at this. Are you worried about having to measure all your cake mix? Forget about it. We've got pre-measured cake mix just for you. And I love that you point out the MIT bio.
Well, you know, I mean, obviously pre-measured cake mix is a huge business today, you know, with things like Betty Crocker or boxed cake, you know,
angels
mixes
and food, devil's
all
food.
Of that stuff. So maybe he seemed early to the party here because I guess it wasn't that necessarily that concept that took off, but something that it led to.
And before we get to that cool story about Betty Crocker and shelf-stable cake mix in particular, they didn't need to add an egg.
Right.
If you buy it now, you don't need to have an egg. It was entirely a piece of propaganda meant to make it feel like you were cooking because you cracked an egg and put it into the thing. This is a true story.
I believe you.
You're right, absolutely, Noel, that Haas started with cake mix, just like Drake started in Degrassi, mm-hmm. but he had so much further to go in the mid-1920s.
Long way to the top.
Yeah. And he started from the bottom of the cake pan, long way to the top. In the mid-1920s, Haas got peppermint oil from a local chemist, and he said, I'm going to make a peppermint candy. And the way he pitched it in the Ridiculous History universe was something like not just regular peppermint candy. It's elevated. It's sophisticated. It's strong.
Cold pressed. I'd never heard that term associated with this kind of thing. Yeah, I guess I just think of that as coffee, but I guess it really is just in a particular process of distilling something into something else. I guess it's not just a way of making iced coffee. You can do it with other things to kind of like, you know, steep something.
I'm picturing a bunch of people sitting around and going, what? We press our peppermints hot. And he says, hear me out. We're going to put a lot of sugar in these and we're going to make them tiny tablets, lozenges, pills. And we're going to also be very mindful about the shape. They're going to be little rounded rectangular bricks. That way we can wrap them more easily. Right. We talked about this in our divisive candy series. Mm-hmm. The innovation of individual packaging or machine wrapping is huge for the game.
And also how a lot of those folks that were kind of early to market were using pre-existing war era, wartime type machines, or, you know, things that were already used in pharmaceutical manufacturing to press these tablets. That's why they look so pill-like. But he did just that and dubbed it Pez, which is short for a German word that means peppermint that I'm going to give a go to. I believe it's Ferrerminze.
Well done. Yeah. You got to get weird with the R's on that one. The thing is, this guy sends out sort of prototypes, right? Demo versions of this to his friends, to his coworkers, and they all love it. They love it so much that he starts making little packages for it, little tins. And this leads to the creation of Food Manufacturing Corporation's Pez candies. And locally, they're a hit. You know, people are talking to each other in suburbs of Austria, and they're like, you got to go to Vienna. And when you go, you got to get the good candy. What's the good candy? And they're like, well, you know how we say Pfefferzements? And he says, well, just call them Pez. You want to be cool. You want to be a local. And so Haas, to his credit, knows he has a smart thing. He knows he's got lightning in a jar here. So he says, how can I get Pez outside of Austria?
Yeah, let's put this lightning in a tin, baby, because the tin can be repurposed, you know, like still to this day, Altoid tins are used for guitar picks and little buttons or whatever, sewing kits, things like that. It's nice to have an extra thing that retains your branding and then is used for other purposes. So he creates these very, you know, aesthetically pleasing little pocket tins for this candy. And it does gangbusters business, at least in regionally, locally. But like you said, Haas wanted more. He wanted to take it wide.
Time, by the way, he's handing these things to his friends.
Right.
He's like waving his hands and performatively coughing because they all smoke.
Yes, of course. I mean, the Germans loved their cigarette, as did, you know, all Europeans and Americans. This was a golden time for cigarettes. But I believe, to your point, Ben, there was enough intel creeping in data that maybe this wasn't the best thing to do. And so there was almost like a new-ish market opening up for anti-smoking, for quitting smoking, cessation, right? We didn't have nicotine lozenges or patches, but mints, that was an early form of kind of that oral fixation sort of substitute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the early days, a lot of the advertisements concerned breath, like fresh breath, smelling better. And you could see in some of the ad marketing quotes like, no smoking, pezzing allowed, P-E-Z.
Making it a verb. I love that.
Yeah. They were on to something. And the idea was that they could help people, as you said, quit smoking tobacco. I imagine it was mainly tobacco. And they're coming in at a very weird time socially because this is post-World War II. Smoking is very, very in. It's very en vogue at this point because everybody's a little bit fatalistic in Europe. Just being honest. And so this guy is still thinking of these things as just branded peppermints. And he says, you know, if you're trying to quit, you might have some sort of oral fixation or some need to busy yourself with your hands. So he says, let's give them something else to put in their mouths in place of a tobacco cigarette. And this is how we're going to target smokers.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion.
That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a bit of Bernays level calculation here.
Yeah, well, because it's also, I believe it stemmed from the availability of the peppermint oil and also the reputation that it had as being a bit more of a medicinal kind of thing, because it was only really available in pharmacies. But it's my understanding that Haas, for this experiment, either like happened into a connect for some peppermint oil or something, you know, and then was like, let's make this peppermint oil into peppermint oil and aid, or little tablets that we can sell for the purposes of smoking cessation. So you have the birth of the very first flavor of Pez.
Yeah. And going back to the cold pressing, I want to give a very important shout out to Sean Peterson, who is the company historian at Pez Candy Incorporated. Sean points out that there is a logic, a method to the madness of cold pressing. To your point, peppermint oil was tricky for most industrial applications because it evaporated in heat. Cold pressing changes this. You put the sugar and the various flavoring together, you literally just smash it. You just smash that stuff together until it becomes cohesive. And originally, they didn't have the dispensers. They just had, like we're saying, the Altoids level metal tins, or they were wrapped in foil. But this was a huge technological breakthrough for the peppermint game.
Interesting. So cold pressing really is just kind of like suspending something in a solution and just letting it kind of do its thing.
In the case of Pez, they just smushed it together. I cannot speak with any sort of authority about cold press coffee.
It may well just be a mismatching of terms, and the cold pressing that I'm familiar with for like coffee would be a different process.
But can you walk through cold press coffee?
Oh, I think it's literally just taking a, you know, macerating coffee grounds in cold water and then putting it in the fridge and letting it sit in there. Like I have like a cold press kit that's literally just a kind of a narrow carafe, and then it has this sort of agitator stick that, you know, fits through the top, and you literally just mix it a lot like you would with a French press, which you do obviously hot, but instead of it being with hot water, it's with cold water, and then you just let it sit in the fridge, and then the pour spout on the carafe filters out the coffee grounds. You essentially just get like cold water that's been steeped in coffee grounds, but it doesn't require heat.
Mm, Okay. Was that a thing you think that Haas was aware of?
Or I think it might. I don't know. Like, I'm still wondering. It's maybe a conversation for another time, but the history of cold pressing, or if these things are indeed related. But it does feel like they might well be. Because I think of cold pressed coffee as a little bit more of a modern thing, but a lot of times things that sort of catch, you know, the zeitgeist or become in vogue often are things that are old that just haven't really been, you know, had a resurgent moment, you know?
My favorite example of that is the resurgence of handmade in your favorite local products. Originally, most human things were indeed handmade.
That's right.
So anyway, be cautious when you go to the grocery store, folks, or your favorite tobacconist, or your favorite candy store. There is a big psychological question that Haas and his team spend a lot of time on. They think, well, if we are replacing smoking cigarettes, shall we not replace everything? Like, we want to make our new thing as familiar and as seamless in the world of habit as we can. And that is why, true story, in 1947, Haas and his team designed the Pez dispenser on purpose to look like a cigarette lighter.
Holy crap. That's brilliant marketing. So it's like, it's almost like a comb switchblade, you know? It sort of neuters the thing, you know, that was like the danger. It takes the danger out, you know?
Am I going to kill you? Or am I handsome?
Or it could be both. You could technically shank somebody in the neck with a comb switchblade.
You have to have a lot of forward motion.
That's very true.
It's possible. Right.
I had no idea about this, but it makes perfect sense. It's got that hinge. It reminds me of like those old classy kind of metal, more slim cigarette lighters from back in the day that would have been gold and maybe something you would have gotten for retirement. You know what I mean? Like these very, very, very classy. So it would have been a way of even, because hell, guys, lighting a cigarette is also a fixation of its own kind, you know, just flicking that thing, getting that reaction, hearing that sound.
The muscle memory, the ritualization. It's kind of like when people worry at rosaries, right? Or count the beads. It's like a fidget spinner.
It's a total fidget spinner. Holy crap. This is brilliant. So they start with it as, you know, this very recognizable device. When did they slap Shaggy from Scooby-Doo's head on these guys?
Well, that's going to take a bit
man,
of history.
I'm ready.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
We got to get through a little bit more history.
Like
first.
This is fun. This is not get through. This is fun, weird stuff. And it's going to change the way you look at Pez, who is not an official sponsor of today's program.
Pez should sponsor more podcast stuff. I'm just saying.
Yeah, they'd be great for it. You know?
Isn't it funny, though, how Pez is one of those legacy brands that just literally doesn't have to advertise? Have you ever seen an ad for Pez ever?
Also, I got a pitch. Pezcast. You're welcome. We'll do it.
Branded content, baby.
Oh, Max.
It's not too late. Sponsor us, Pez.
Max is like, my arm recovered just for this.
For this. And now I'm literally going to injure it again by slamming my fist down on the desk in rage.
So it's 1949. Right. And they advertise they start selling these at the Vienna Trade Fair in Austria.
It's like a World's Fair type situation, mm-hmm. practically. Yeah.
Yeah. And they call it Pocket Article Dispensing Container. Super so sexy Austrian name. Yeah.
Sorry. I know Austria and Germany are not the same. I do know that.
Yeah. They have a similar vibe. I've been
adherence to the rules a little bit. You know what I mean? Yeah. No nonsense. Yes.
Enjoyment of the peppermints is mandatory.
This is indeed mandatory enjoyment. I love that.
So they do look like, and you can again see early designs. The very first Pez container does not have a Scooby-Doo mascot on it, but it looks like a slim rectangular cigarette lighter. And they probably based it on two things: the resemblance to an earlier piece of technology and the easiest, most efficacious way to package these peppermint bricks, right? So they were, it's strange. I didn't know this. I assumed the old Pez dispensers would have been wrought of some sort of metal substance, but no, they were plastic.
That shocked me a little bit, right? I mean, I guess we're talking 1947, so I guess I didn't really think of plastic as being as common as it is now. When did plastic really start to find its way into mass, you know, mass produced products?
We're talking about plastic, modern plastic.
Bakelite, like right? Wasn't it Bakelite? Yeah. What is this?
After the Second World War, according to Plain Products, and then again during the 1960s and 70s is when it really, I think, started getting very affordable to do things with plastic.
I see. Right. Okay.
So it was before. It was definitely before the golden age of plastic.
I thought so. Yeah, that's it. So they were sort of early to the dance.
Think about it. They're like early adopters. They are to candy what Apple is to cell phones. You know, it's very sexy. If you want to be cool in Vienna and abroad, you pull out your Pez. And they were originally called...
Pull out your Pez sounds naughty. I don't know why.
But only God can judge us. Or maybe the creator of Pez. At first, they called these things, they sold the container as like an early adopter, look at this kind of flex. But they originally...
Like a commemorative, it was like a promotional almost, yeah, right?
Promotional, perfect. They originally didn't call it just Pez, they called it Pez Drops, and they marketed it as something that you would buy if you were an adult and doing well in life. It was aspirational.
Got it. Yeah. The advertisements also touted the health benefits and they showed, you know, happy, affluent couples making out with the caption, deliciously fresh breath. You mentioned another slogan earlier, I believe, right, Ben?
Yeah. No smoking, pezzing allowed. Also, you've got the parallels with Edward Bernays are amazing here because they also built a street team.
Give out free samples, right?
Cool looking people out in busy squares or major events. Picture your favorite sports game. There's someone there handing out free samples of Pez. They had super attractive people in advertisements who'd be like, "Are you already pezzing?" They were called the Pez Girls. They were very famous in their time. I would argue we can also see some parallels with vaping today.
Totally. Oh, absolutely. They took a page out of the old Pez playbook, right? So this is all, of course, in Europe early on, and it's not until the early 1950s that the Pez candies start to be available in the United States. But instead of it taking off as some sort of anti-smoking aid, seemed like kids were super interested in this newfangled Pez stuff.
Yeah, we want to give a very special, very important thank you to Haas III for not making candy cigarettes, you know, for going with Pez the tablet over Pez the cylinder.
Much more clean cut, much more wholesome.
Yeah, and so sales, like you were pointing out, Noel, sales are not amazing.
Just because it's only one demo. It's like just the kids, right?
Yeah, just the kids. And at this point, penny candy is still a thing. So it's like, why am I going to buy my kid this weird flex?
Expensive European mint.
Exactly. Yeah. There we go. Mm-hmm. For everybody listening along, I want to describe to you, because we are an audio show, fellow ridiculous historians, Noel, you had the most beautiful furrow in your brow. I saw you experiencing that moment where you were like, weird European mints.
I'm sorry. No shade to weird European mints. I enjoy them every now and again, you know, at the Lidl. You get some in the checkout at the Aldi or the Lidl. There's some good ones out there. Like Altoids has to be European. Isn't that Swiss or something? It has to be. It's like a legacy Euro mint. Mm-hmm. And I remember a time where Altoids were not as widely available as they are today and were in and of themselves a bit of a flex.
Altoids, you know, are like butter cookies. You know, they're better because of the tin.
100%.
Also, ready to be surprised, they're from London.
Okay, well, still, it's European.
What? No way.
It's European.
What? No way.
Fisherman's Friend, the grossest of
1780s, though.
Yeah,
they've been
I know.
Around for a while.
Hey, I don't. This may not be a story the Jedi would like me to tell you, but folks, you can listen back through How Stuff Works. And should you be an astute history student, you will find most of the old school stuff podcast had a period where they had to talk about Altoids in particular. The history, the science, how they're made, what peppermint is. Anyway, you know, you get in situations, and that's where Haas found himself because he was like, what? They don't like my fancy European anti-smoking mints? And then his folks got back to them, and he said, well, sir, we apologize. Turns out only children like the mints in the United States. And lo and behold, they leaned into that demographic.
Huh. What else do kids like, Ben? Fruity flavors? Cartoon mascots, perhaps?
I think you're on to something. Maybe
Santa Claus?
Yeah, maybe a Popeye, maybe a cowboy, maybe a space trooper of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly
Let's make
what
them
happened.
Taste not like extremely strong anti-smoking mints, but rather like oranges and lemons, strawberries, perhaps.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion.
That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million? Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm telling you, vapes.
It is totally the vape. Dude, it is entirely that thing. That's wild. Only, you know, we're just peddling sugar here, not necessarily popcorn lung-inducing, you know, inhalables.
So by 1955, they're going full vape on this. And they have notable public figures for children branded in the vape, similar to the way that fast food
restaurants...
You gotta
stop calling it the vape. The Pez people are gonna come after us.
Okay. Well, vapes weren't a thing at this point.
No, it's very, very
and they
true.
Were
it's very
not,
true.
They were not peddling something insidious. They were like, let's make this candy. Let's make sure we appeal to the kids, right? Just like old Dirty Bastard said, about Wu-Tang. And so they get
it is for the kids.
It's true. For the children. Yeah. They get the most notable figures for kids in America back in the day.
Which would have required agreements, which would have required licensing, right? And that's when things get really interesting. Sorry. What are some of the big names that first rolled out that would have been of the era?
Well, Mickey Mouse, obviously. What else?
We've got Bozo the Clown, who was massive, both in stature and shoe size and also popularity. And then, of course, Casper the Friendly Ghost. So those are some of the earliest. And I mean, I don't have the specifics in front of me, but those would have had to have been marketing agreements between the owners of that intellectual property and the Pez company.
I would imagine.
Maybe that law was less buttoned up as it is today. And at first they were like, oh, they're going to love to be associated with this. But I would imagine they would have had to at least talk to those, you know, whoever owned the rights to those characters. Because certainly that's the direction that it went in.
Yeah, no kidding. Stay tuned for the Ridiculous History Pez Dispensers. Well, maybe, you know, it's good to dream. The weird thing about this is they yet again hit on this amazing moment in the zeitgeist, in society, and Pez becomes a pop culture icon. Everybody's got to have it for several decades. It's kind of like when you see politicians put a little selfie on social media and they've got a tiny bottle of hot sauce.
Sure.
They go, I keep that thing on me.
Oh, no, stop it. Hillary Clinton, you're embarrassing yourself. Go home.
Well, it's like that. But, you know, for the world with Pez, for the Western world, especially in 1973, Pez builds a candy factory and warehouse. This is a Wonka moment you were talking about earlier. Right. They build it in Connecticut, in Orange, Connecticut, and it's entirely to supply the Western world with Pez, or excuse me, it's entirely to supply the United States with Pez. And now that factory is still around. They make all the Pez. They make so much Pez, you guys.
Apparently they have the world's largest Pez dispenser, because of course they do. If it was going to exist, it was going to exist there. Man, they're a veritable Sackler family of candy distribution.
Well, they're a little better than the Sacklers, I would
know. I kid. It's gallows humor because it's just so sad.
Yeah. And we do gallows humor because in these economic times, it's tough to afford tears. So this factory is amazing, though. It is a study in efficacy. Right now, they make about 12 million tablets, they call them, little Pez bites.
Sorry, that's what invoked the big pharma thing for me.
Of course, the tablet. 12
million tablets a day, you know.
Yeah, they got the medicinal background. But Noel, maybe tell us a little bit more about what happens to our buddy Haas.
He dies.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he overdosed on Pez. No, I'm joking. That didn't happen. He did, though, pass away in 1986. And he did, of course, leave behind a massive enterprise of confectionery sweeties. Pez Candy Incorporated became the going concern. It was originally, I believe, Haas. His name was in the name of the company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the innovations to the dispensers continued after his death. You know how, like, if you look at one now, you'll see feet at the base.
Bozo so it can the stand cloud up level. Your display case.
Yeah, exactly. You nailed it. And if you are a Pez collector, and there are a ton of Pez collectors, then you're looking at the feet first, the way people look at shoes. You're saying, well, how can I tell whether this is a vintage Pez dispenser or a mere reproduction?
Same with Matchbox cars. We talked about Matchbox cars, I believe, in a previous episode. Check that one out. There, you know, that's a very similarly collectible thing where you can tell what era they came from by looking at like the wheel bearings or whatever it might be. I think most people have at some point in their life owned a Pez dispenser, you know, bought one on a lark at the grocery store checkout. Max, you'll be proud to know that I have, it's actually in my kid's room, a unopened Star Trek the next generation themed set of Pez dispensers, including Jean-Luc Picard as Borg.
You got a little cutis.
You guys are nerds. No, yeah, I didn't know you had a name. He's in there. The regular JLP is there. And some of the other hits from that, you know, era of the show.
Which one is JLP?
Jean-Luc Picard.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Okay. I just took some liberties there.
So this is true. And you have hit upon quite a potential investment there, Noel, because these Pez dispensers, for the enthusiast, they can sell from anywhere for a few bucks to thousands of dollars. As you found, Max, one of the most rarefied of Pez dispenser designs is from 1961. It sold for $12,500 in 2013. So that's still kind of $12,000. And then the same
Isn't
year,
that like a political
Yes.
Like themed
yeah.
Pez
promo
dispenser?
Branding kind of stuff. Yeah.
They had the donkey of the which party is that again? I always forget.
Democrat.
They
had the donkey and the elephant.
Ah,
they
I see.
Both.
Okay.
And originally there was gonna be a turkey as the political mascot back
That's
in the day.
Fun.
Ben Franklin loved
it. He wanted that to be the bird, the national instead of the eagle.
Yeah, Ben, I don't know if this is completely apocryphal, but everyone would call Andrew Jackson a jackass that he liked it so much that he changed the Democratic Party's symbol to a donkey.
Oh, that's
it is apocryphal, but there's validity to it because
he definitely was a jackass.
Yeah, that's true. And also the donkey was a more respected character in political discourse at the time.
The donkey was in the Bible, man. He ferried Jesus and Mary to whatever, the wise men. I don't remember the story exactly.
Alex Jones is eating donkeys.
He's eating a lot of stuff these days.
Speaking of biblical terms for donkeys. So,
oh, that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we can go back and forth and explore so many ins and outs. I think you hit on it, guys. The branding is what really set Pez apart. The candy itself remained relatively consistent. It was the dispensers that changed.
There have to be some people out there that genuinely enjoy Pez for the flavor, but
I like
Max,
it. I like okay, it. Right. Yeah,
I just don't like powdery, chalky candy. That's just a
it's issue. Mostly nostalgia.
I
it's
get
Chris.
It.
My parents would always get Alex and I Pez dispensers for Christmas.
Oh, me
when
too.
We were younger.
I got
it's
some
a
in the stocking.
Stuffing.
Mm-hmm. Boy, is it ever! Yeah.
And can I talk about one cool thing I found that Pez has done in the past for
Please.
Charities? So they have done two separate ones. They did one for Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, and they did one for Prince William and Duchess Kate, which it was they created like these Pez dispenser limited run, put them up to auction, and all proceeds went one was for Make-A-Wish Foundation, the other one was for Starlight Children's Foundation. So basically, like, hey, we know you guys want to collect it. Help us help you. You spend a bunch of money, we'll give it to charity. So good on
Pez
for
that. I support
that.
I support that promo or branding or merchandising, whatever we want to call it, for charitable causes. And I'm very, very interested in imagining what a Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. the Quister Pez dispenser, looks like.
It would look a lot like the Jean-Luc Picard in my Star Wars set.
Is the Jean-Luc Picard different, or JPL, as you say, is that different from the Locutus?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Locutus is
two
white.
Two separates?
He has the, yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's that Picard. Guy where he's white and he's got the gear and the eye thingy.
Does
and
the laser move?
No. That would be cool, though.
Does it shine?
No. It's a Pez dispenser. You know what? I say that not knowing enough about, you know, are there some really mega bespoke Pez dispensers that have moving parts that, like,
there's
have,
probably,
like,
of course.
Perhaps. I thought maybe we could just wrap up today's episode by naming a few other pretty pricey Pez dispensers that have sold throughout the years. Starting with, of course, the political donkey, as we mentioned. That's the number one. So maybe we spoiled that one a little bit. But in the 1950s, clear space gun Pez dispenser also sold in a year that is unknown. for $11,211. And then the Prince Harry and Meghan Markle one you mentioned was also a pretty pricey collector's item. Although I don't imagine that money would go toward the Make-A-Wish thing. It was just the initial sales, right?
Well, I guess everything's
that's the auction. That's the auction.
That was the auction. Okay, so that was so the reason that was so inflated was because it was specifically for like a one of a kind kind of situation. I got it.
And we want to end with a PSA, fellow ridiculous historians, Pez enthusiast as well. If you're buying a Captain Hook Pez dispenser, it needs to have the soft head.
Oh boy, what does that mean?
I'm glad you asked.
I'm picturing it like as a plushie or something, but I don't know how that would work.
It means that they were, for a time in 1979, during the late 1970s, if we're being honest, for a couple of years, they were cheaper to produce than the typical plastic model. So they were a softer petroleum substance. But then in 1979, same year, the oil crisis hits. And it becomes very expensive to make the soft head Captain Hook. So if you ever find yourself in a Pez convention and you want to know who knows their business, look for the person who is just individually squeezing Captain Hook Pez dispenser
like heads. Avocados.
Yeah, like avocados, just so, like produce. And
well, I can't imagine these wouldn't be behind glass, though, or they wouldn't be letting you squeeze them. But maybe.
Maybe, with gloves on, you know?
You could, if you did happen to find one from your squeezins, you could net about $1,000 for one of those.
Yes, U.S. dollars, even today. I also want to mention, you can get a, for anybody looking for Halloween ideas, you can get a Pez container costume, and I think you can customize it.
Yeah, I think we mentioned this off air, but I mean, it is a little bit macabre the way the candies are essentially, you know, dispensed out of the neck hole of the head. It's, you know, the thing goes all the way back at a very severe, disturbing angle, and then a weird little rectangle of white candy pops out.
Aren't there some where they've, like, sculpted the lower jaw mouth is, or mandible?
Yeah, and it's like, it looks like a hinged mouth, like a freaking
like
anaconda.
A snake mouth. Yeah,
a 1,000,000%. It's weird. But it's one of those things that we just accept because it's just been, it's another example that we run into all the time with history. Now, this is stating the obvious of like people being first to market with something. We just grow to accept it, even if it's kind of weird.
So where do we land? Are we all fans of Pez?
I like the dispensers. I think it's cool.
Yeah.
Americana kitsch, you know? Yeah. Even though it's not Americana
straight
at all.
From Vienna. Yeah.
Americana via Vienna. Yeah.
There we go. That's fine. Apples are from Kazakhstan, and we say as American as apple pie. So
grits are probably from somewhere in the Levant. You
know? There we go. With that, we want to give a big, big shout out to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams, our research associate, Mr. Max Williams, and our resident Pez model, perhaps non-consensually, Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister. No, he would be so on board. He would love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I, now that I think about it, I want to say that at some point, he either had made or someone had made a custom bobblehead of Jonathan Strickland.
It was him.
Quister. Yeah, it sounds about right. It sounds like something he would do. Huge thanks to Christopher Asiotis, Steve Jeffcoats here in spirit, Alex Williams, brother of Max, who composed this slammin' jammin' theme tune that you're hearing right now.
Big, big thanks to AJ Bahamas Jacobs. Check out his show, The Puzzler. We got a fellow Ben. He's a real expert on badasses of the week. He'll be joining us soon. Mm-hmm. And of course, grateful thanks to Mega Cube.
Indeed. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.